This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 409 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are, strangely, still in love with Outlander.
Oh my God. Yes. Now, you may not know this because we've taken a few longer breaks this year, and that's okay because life happens. But as we've always responded to any tweets, emails, Instagram messages, Facebook, but whenever anyone has reached out and said, are you coming back or have you gone? No, we have not gone. So there's not really anything to come back to. We are still here, just lagging in consistency. But as I've said before, we have a decent amount of stuff in the can, and we will begin, actually, this is a nice segue. We will begin recording more regularly, more on that in the future, but we will begin recording more regularly because we have a something-something. Summer, what is a something-something? I think this is related to maybe some kind of announcement.
We have a goal.
That's a very good way to put it. We have a goal.
There's an end date now because before it was nebulous. It's just for us. Before it was just nebulous, we didn't know how long they were going to be filming for, when they were going to be airing it. So we've been, you know, slowly but surely making our way through Breath of Snow and Ashes at more of a leisurely pace, I would say.
We finished Breath of Snow and Ashes last year. Oh, we've been making our way through something else.
Echo in the Bone?
Yes.
Yes, Jesus.
No, you got it.
Sorry, guys. Echo in the Bone. We've been making our way through Echo in the Bone. Good Lord. But now we have a date to attempt to meet. I don't know if we will, but it's a goal.
We will. Well, we don't have a date per se. We have a time frame.
Right.
But we have to make our own date, basically. So
that is true.
For now. And then we can stretch it out or contract it as needed.
Yes.
Because what is it? Share it with the world.
Outlander
people?
Is scheduled, we think. It looked professionally done. Outlander looks like it's scheduled to be back in the summer of 2023.
Yes. And so the announcement is season 7 will premiere in summer of 2023. That's the first announcement. But the subtext. The thing that's left unsaid is you have both meteorological, I've known of that word for a while, but you have both meteorological summer season, mm-hmm. and then you have
me
astrological summer season, which
well,
I learned.
Then you have me.
I learned about the difference. I don't know there was a difference. I learned about the difference in, I guess, September when I was, you know, I love autumn, blah, blah, blah. And I like hold hard. That sounds really bad. I hold tight onto this, like, you know, autumn starts around, you know, depending on the year, but 21st, 22nd of September, right? Depending on the year. As soon as it was not even Labor Day, as soon as it was September 1st, everyone's saying autumn, 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 like people on TV, people on the news. I'm like, hold your horses, people. And then I was slightly corrected. So I wasn't wrong in that. Yes, autumn starts, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, on or around the September 21st, 22nd, 20th, whatever. That is true. However, that is astrological autumn, meteorological autumn. So weather related, or for the purpose of weather, I guess, discussing the weather, it is September 1st. And so if we take that truth and carry it forward to the summer, what does summer 2023 mean? Okay. Are you speaking meteorologically or are you speaking astrologically? So yes, maybe
I'm not.
Summer's not. I will. So I'm basically it could be as early as June 1st. Because a lot of people consider that summer. I'm talking the U.S., not the rest of the world. As meteorologically, if I'm not mistaken, it could be as early as June 1st. And then I guess the meteorological summer would be June 1st to August 31st. So that's the first window. The second window for summer, literally, is June 20, again, 2021st, astrological summer, through approximately September 19th, 20th, 21st, depending on when autumn starts next fall.
Oh my God, I hated everything about this conversation.
How? Boring?
Because it doesn't matter. No, leave it in. It's fine. I'm just saying.
The window. Okay, so in short, too long, don't listen. Too late, I know. In short, as early as June 1st, as late as September, say 20th. So you've got June, July, August, and much of September. You have like a 3.5 to 4, almost 4 month window. So when does it start? Well, we have no idea. Sometime in that season, in that window.
You know, in my gut reaction, it's going to be sometime between June 1st and September 1st. I think they're going to follow that kind of 4 month, 3 month, 3 month.
Correct.
Three months,
I don't think people are as stuck on astrological stuff as I am. No, that's, I'm not like
that's just you.
I'm not into astrology or anything. I love like seasonality and like living life according to season or not like
strictly. I like seasoning my food.
Oh, I mean, we all do. Come on. But I tend to think along what Summer is saying. I think that it will be in the summer, meaning in the months of June, July, August.
So probably when your kids are going to be out of school, so you're going to have to watch this in another room that they can't watch it with you.
Oh, so maybe not this, depending on their age. High school seniors, probably okay. Anyway, so that's the first thing. And the second thing, well, and then of course the follow-up to that is that therefore we, because we don't know, and the earliest possible window will be like, let's say June 1st. So Summer and I need to have our final episode of discussing Echo, a final read-along episode, discussing Echo up by May 31st. Or the nearest Sunday there too. And I agree with you. I think it's between June and August. So if we go by that window, we have between now and the end of May to finish. But yes,
right.
That's our now plan. When we hear from them, and I don't think it won't be May. They usually let us know 2 to 3 months early.
It's not going to be a personal phone call.
I'm just saying timing wise, they don't announce it like 2 weeks before. They usually give you a month or three. Right. So we'll probably hear, I think, February. What are you laughing at?
Three?
Yeah.
That's a jump, man. Usually it's like a month or two, a month or three. They'll start telling us anytime at this point then.
Well, I don't think they're going to go from summer 2023 in December to July 1st on January 15th. Like they're not going to tell us in January. I just think
technically they haven't told us anything because that was not released by America.
No, but Starz released it.
Yeah, but not to us.
Summer, if you look at the key art, it's all over the key art that was released by Starz and people representing Starz.
Okay, but we only saw the trailer because somebody else put it up.
But the trailer was separate. I'm saying that's the second announcement. So the first one is this time frame, which was released with the key art. And actually, I guess key art goes with the trailer. So anyway, there's a date or an idea of a date, which we don't know. Basically a window. We have a window. And so for our own purposes, until we get the actual date, our plan is to finish by the end of May. That's all we can do right now, right? And we'll adjust as needed. The second announcement, Summer. We kind of already said it, but don't tell me my name. I know my name.
Don't tell me. Are you sure?
What's the second announcement, Sum?
The trailer?
Yeah.
Okay. I was like, wait, I don't know now.
So,
because I thought we touched on it.
You mentioned it, but I was trying to keep them separate. So there's also a trailer was also released as you, I promise you, you've heard it. You've watched it probably a million times before you hear our little show. I mean, maybe not Summer, but I'm talking about our listener.
I feel bad.
Don't feel bad. It was cute, but I can't say cute. It was good. A lot of people have a lot of opinions on it, which I get. They definitely took some left turns. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but at least in... Because we never know what they show us. Is it a dream? Is it a premonition? Is it just something that happens, but then, you know, it's changed the last minute?
I 100% knew that when she slapped Mrs. Fitz or Mrs. Fitz slapped her in the face, that was 100% going to be a dream. Yeah.
Yeah, I did not. I freaked out. How can they take this hard of a left turn? Like, we haven't even started season one. What?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So all that said, there is a new trailer and there's new key art, which, I think... Except for season one, which was obviously new to everybody. You know, you have nothing to compare it to. The key art for season one was so gorgeous. And it's not just, you know, like we like to see Jamie and Claire on the pictures. No, I'm talking about Scotland. Forget the humans. It's about Scotland. Okay, this is the New World. Fair enough. But it's shot in Scotland, okay? The colors were so, I just ate the mic. The colors were so gorgeous that I was like, and then... Every time, like I always get the little thrill, like little butterflies in my stomach whenever I either happen upon episode, the beginning of episode one, or, you know, go out of my way to play episode one.
All right.
There's almost nothing.
All right. What?
Listen.
You've made it perfectly clear. I understand now. What happens is I need to watch this so that we can have a real conversation about that, because otherwise it's just you talking.
This is not the trailer. This is not the trailer. It's the key art. All I'm saying is, and no, we're not going to talk about it. I'm just giving my opinion that it is beautiful. The colors, the coloring is beautiful. And I don't remember such beautiful key art except for nothing that as from them, it has been bad. But mm-hmm. I don't remember seeing something as beautiful as...
Do you just like the color combination because it's close to Tiffany blue in places?
I mean, it's kind of like a rainbow smush. It's like pink to purple to blue. I mean, it's beautiful, but it's absolutely gorgeous. But the one that only comes close to it, or it comes close to, is season one. That's what I'm trying to say. So there's lots to watch, lots to talk about, much more, obviously.
Which season of season one?
Probably
A or B.
Probably A, the beginning. The first one. Okay. Just the coloring, just the background is so beautiful. Anyway, so what we will do, not this episode, obviously, but what we will do sometime, we hope, in the month of January, is to do a little live chat, maybe half an hour to an hour, whatever the people want, however mm-hmm. long they're interested in speaking about it. We will have watched the trailer several times. We will have, I don't want to say break it down, because we're not there to provide any info. We're just there to chat about it with fellow fans, right? Like, we're not newsbreakers or anything. So,
especially not at this point.
What does that mean?
It's been out for like a month.
Nothing given out? Oh, that. Oh, Lord. Okay. No, it's been out for like a week, Summer.
It feels like a month.
So
I have no concept of time anymore.
We hope sometime in January to have had a chance to watch it, like, you know, several times in detail, take notes, whatever. And then go live in our group, because that way it's still open to all. It's still free. You can join us. We can still talk about it, whatever we were going to say, but then people can join in. So yeah, that's what those are the announcements. We have a time frame ish and a trailer and beautiful key art. Some of the most beautiful key art.
I just wanted to say,
please do,
that we need to pat ourselves on the back for actually recording a Happy New Year blessing on Happy New Year.
I'm glad you said that, because I was going to say, I think we're done. Yes, it is December 31st, 2022. You will hopefully get this today before midnight. You may not listen before midnight, but you'll hopefully.
Or if you're in Australia, it's already tomorrow.
Oh, that's true. We missed you. Sorry, Southern people. No, not Southern people. Sorry, people in time.
The Southern Hemisphere.
No, that's not it. Sorry, people who are in time zones.
Zones.
So far ahead of us that we can't catch you. That's okay.
We did our best.
It is what it is. So yeah, we wish you a very happy new year. All the best for 2023 as we dive into that together. Kicking or screaming or loving and doving. I don't know. One way or the other, may we all be around to go to 2023.
Oof. So you're saying be around in 2023, we only have to make it for another like 12 hours?
That is
awful.
May
you all be around for 12 more hours. Does it end then?
I love how Summer takes what I say and twists it into macabre.
Well, I mean, it's because if I were to take you literally, that is what people would hear.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Kat K.
Okay, on to our read-along. We will be continuing our An Echo in the Bone read-along with chapter 4, entitled Not Yet a While.
So in this chapter, Mrs. Bug and the old Granny McLeod are dead. In the beginning of this chapter, they're laid outside, and I think maybe Arch will come out, because they haven't seen him since everything's gone down, if his wife is visible. They are thinking of having a type of wake, and they take turns through the night sitting over the deceased.
If this were a game, there's no way to win this game. Like, there's no way that you can look at these outcomes and be like, I have more of this, more swagger, and here's how we win. No one wins. At the end of the day, Merdina Bug is dead.
Yes, so I don't see any competition. I mean, I just don't see where what you mean, wins what? Wins, loses what? She's already dead, so there's no, I don't get it.
The issue is between Archbug's feelings and everyone else's feelings. Honestly.
Yes, there's a lot to come. And we're going to hopefully find some out. So Jamie is convinced that Arch is out there somewhere, definitely watching. And he and Claire are talking about this. And he says, there's no way Arch is not aware of something. At the very least, he's watching. He says, because if it were Claire and Claire were dead, he would be right there. He would never leave her side. He wouldn't allow himself to be brought away from her. Claire wonders, what will Arch do? Now, what might he do given this blow? So it's not just, you know, someone's upset or someone's sad or someone's had a loss. Arch lived for his wife. And his wife, I would guess his wife lived for him, but it might be more appropriate to say that he lived for her. I don't know. So she notices that Jamie had...
I'm just saying, Arch... 100% made statements about how he was 100% for Merdina and she was 100% for him. Like, they had a connection that was bigger than any other external connection. So, like, regardless of whatever he and Jamie had or he and Claire had, whatever Merdina and Arch had was a different level. But also, I want you to know that Davina said Martina, and I was very confused for about 30 minutes today. Now I know it's Merdina, but I had a moment where I was like, what's her name?
Claire notices Jamie had both pistols with him there as they're sitting on the porch, and they were loaded and primed. So maybe Jamie thought that Arch wasn't wholly undangerous or not dangerous. Jamie pours a little bit of whiskey on each of the women's foreheads. And in kind of a eulogy, maybe not a eulogy, but just kind of part of the wake, I guess. Jamie says he'll remember her always for her biscuits. And that's endearing, but it's also kind of funny. She had the best biscuits.
I mean, that's not a problem.
Claire wants to retain her recipe, Mrs. Bug's recipe.
For Piccadilly? Piccadilly? Is that what it was?
Pick a lily.
Okay.
And then remembers, so she wants to write it down because she knows it by memory, but she doesn't want to forget it. She's like, oh, so she's moved, at least has the idea to write it down. And then when she thinks about writing something down, she remembers that she was mid-letter, meaning a letter to Roger Bree et al. Quote, I was only thinking of that letter. I mean, in spite of Roger and Bree knowing the house is burnt down, they'll be happy to know that we're still alive. Unquote. So I never put together. It's been here for however long book 7 has been out. That line's been there. I've never connected anything. It's not a showstopper. It's not new information. It's kind of nice to make a connection, which I had not done before. In that she's just said to Jamie, they'll be happy to know we're still alive. And that's how book 6 ends, right? Just maybe not the very, very end, but in the ending of book 6, you have the Mackenzies at Lallybroch reading a letter. And near the end of that letter is, we are alive. And I thought, oh, that it was just a nice little connection there that I never got before. We learn a little of the planning that went on before Roger and Bree left. Because remember, most of the stuff we learn later in this book. And then I think we learn more in book 8. But we learn... little by little, as they go, more of the plans that Jamie and predominantly Jamie and Roger had put into motion or had at least laid the groundwork for before they left. So once it was decided that they needed to go for the, you know, to get Amanda this life-saving surgery, we don't get, like, we understand that there's gold, right? The gold is under the house. Right? We discover this at the end of book 6, before it burned down or just after it burned down. And we'll have more to say about that in chapter 5. But we basically, in front of us, real time, quote unquote, we never get insights or live descriptions as they do it of all the planning that went on before Roger and Brig left. Quote, aware both of the precarious times and of the uncertain survival of historical documents, Jamie and Roger had worked out several schemes for the passage of information, ranging from the publication of coded messages in various newspapers to something elaborate involving the Church of Scotland and the Bank of England, unquote. So she doesn't want to end the letter. Claire does not want to end the letter telling them about Mrs. Bugg. So they decide, they agree, yes, we will wait to tell them in a further letter when it becomes necessary to tell them. So in this discussion of we don't want to end a letter on a really sad, scary note, kind of in passing, Diana drops not a bombshell, but she drops some pretty important information or background information that we don't know, but it's information actually took place in book six. And that is a little bit more detail about what Jamie and Roger planned for communication, how they would communicate. Of course, one-way communication once the Mackenzies had gone. So this letter that that they've read, like I guess in a previous chapter, the one that ends with we are alive, right? This is why that first letter only tells them that they're alive, but nothing about the bugs yet. Then we find out that due to all the snow, Jamie remarks that they're not going to be able to go anywhere until the spring thaw. And yes, he still means to go to Scotland. As a reminder, Jamie's plan, and thus Claire's, is to return to Scotland to get his printing press and to bring it back to the colonies and set up as a printer. And that's how he wants to fight in the coming war. He doesn't want to fight with, you know, physical weapons. He wants to fight as a printer. That is the plan. So this brings Claire to her question. Speaking of travel, she says, asks Jamie, by the way, dear one, where would you want to be buried when the time comes? Like, do you want to be buried here? Is it important to you to be in Scotland? You know, so I can, prioritize getting your body across the, across the pond again. And his response is, funny, quote, if you've got to dispose of my carcass, just leave it for the cows, unquote. So he's not bothered. Doesn't matter. You know, he's telling her, don't make a big fuss. You know, it's not me anymore. I know you'll be sad, but don't spend a ton of money and don't go to a lot of effort, basically. Meanwhile, Claire cannot rid herself of the notion that Jamie will at some point die there in Scotland. He asks her if she'd mind, meaning if she'd mind being in Scotland. I take that to mean. And she says no. But he still says he means to bring young Ian to his mother. So that is one of the two main reasons that he aims to get to, did you spill? That he aims to get to Scotland. So Jamie adds that he'll never face, he has made a promise, I guess, to himself, or a statement to himself, he will never face his son across the barrel of a gun. So Jamie and others are going to the burying ground to check out the ground and see if it's too hard to begin digging for the graves. So that's how that scene ends. And then the next morning, everyone is gathering. They've prepared the bodies. They put them in coffins. They're now going up toward the graveyard. They had the two different mules are, you know, pulling up sleds, and each one with a body, and they're on their way to the graveyard. And just as expected, guess who shows up? Oh, good old Archie Bug. Did you laugh at my Archie?
Not have called him Archie. Called him Archie. But I felt the whole scene was one of unique.
So Arch shows up, follows them all the way to the graveyard. In the kind of, I won't say dithering, in the time before or as they're leading up to the physical burial, he asks Claire to sing. Jamie asks Arch if he wants to see his wife one more time before they bury her. And they uncover the casket, the coffin, and Arch attempts to put a brooch into the coffin with his wife, but he can't do it so easily due to his missing fingers. So Claire immediately steps in and helps pin the brooch to her kerchief. And Diana's writing this description of the brooch. I don't remember a detailed description, but Diana writes that Claire definitely didn't recognized the brooch, and it was of quite good quality. So Claire wonders if, as they began to steal the ingots one at a time from River Run, until they got them all, you know, is this maybe, did he either purchase it or did he have it made from some of the gold? Like, you know, the gold melted down and made into this brooch. We'll never know. But it's just her wondering that. So this brooch was apparently really, really, really nice and definitely not of the quality that the bugs, sans gold, would be able to normally afford. And then they proceed with the funeral. Before they could get to the burying, though, young Ian steps forward and offers his life for the slaying of Mrs. Bug.
Oh, I felt so bad for Ian.
I always feel so bad for Ian.
So bad for
Throughout
Ian
this entire book, I feel bad for Ian.
I know, but if she was absolutely a mother figure for him.
Yeah, that made it even harder.
And he accidentally, like, slayed her? Like, fuck, man. That's... I mean, Jamie feels bad. I'm not going to say Jamie doesn't feel bad. I'm just saying that for Ian, missing his mom, having killed her, and under these circumstances, he feels like he killed his mom. Honestly, he did. He thought he did.
So he steps forward and offers his life for the slaying of Mrs. Bug. And he offers to Archbug to let, you know, kill me since I was the one, even though I did not intend to. She did die by my hand. He even offers his own knife for it. And Claire is now wondering, was this Jamie's plan all along? Quote, the chance of Arch accepting that offer on the spot and cutting Ian's throat in front of a dozen witnesses were slim, no matter how exigent his feelings.
It had to just be Ian, honestly.
But if he publicly declined the offer, then the possibility of a more formal and less bloody recompense was opened. Yet, young Ian would be relieved of at least a measure of his guilt. Unquote. So how does Arch answer? It's not a yes or no. I mean, it's a no, but he doesn't answer with the word yes or no. He says, too easy, boy. He looks around and eyes Rollo and says, will you give me your hound to kill? Ian's immediately is like, no, he's innocent. It wasn't his hand that killed her, but mine. And Arch replies, aye, you see then. And he's no but a flea-ridden beast, not a wife, unquote. And then he looks at Jamie and then Claire. I'll repeat what I said. He looks at Jamie and then Claire and repeats the words, not a wife. So now he's making a comparison to Jamie and Claire.
You're not wrong, but I'm upset about him stating that Ian doesn't have a connection to Rollo in that moment.
No, he didn't say that.
No, but it felt like he was denigrating it, like it was not as important.
He was asking because he knows Rollo is so important to Ian. That's why he asked if he would give him his hound to kill. And Ian's like, no, because it's not his fault. And that is what Arch is referring to. You won't give me this flea-ridden beast to kill. This flea-ridden beast whom you love. I'm trying to make Arch's point. Arch is telling Ian, you love this flea-ridden beast so much. And I know it. Everybody knows he's important to you. We get it. And you won't allow me to kill him who means potentially some of the most to you. And you wonder that it's not about killing whom to kill, but he's trying to say, look, you will not allow this beast to die and you recognize, I honor that you love this beast, but you also recognize that he's a flea-ridden beast. He's not a wife. So Arch is asking, kind of, Arch knows he's going to say no, but Arch is saying, okay, you took away something that is the most meaningful thing to me in the world. I am asking you for something that is one of the most, if not the most, meaningful things to you in the world? And he says, no, understandably. And so that is what that's the point he's trying to drive home to young Ian. He's like, the amount that you would suffer by the loss of that beast is great. And yet that beast is not a wife. So you cannot imagine what I'm going through. And then he looks at Jamie and Claire, as I said, and repeats, not a wife. So the reason I said that several times is because, again, I didn't catch it on any other previous read, but because he repeats, not a wife, after or as he looks at Jamie and Claire, if this had been Jamie, if it had been Jamie who had accidentally killed her, he would have gone after Claire. That's what I'm trying to say. So Claire thinks, quote, I thought my blood ran cold already, and that froze my heart, unquote. And Arch turns and says his last line that we see him for a long time. Quote, he says to Ian, quote, when you've something worth taking, boy, you'll see me again, unquote. And then he turns and walks into the trees.
Enid! Oh my God, Archbug. That's you with an open-ended, I'm going to fuck with you, but I'm not going to tell you when. It was rude. Moving right along to chapter 5, entitled Morality for Time Travelers.
So even though Diana does not give us a time and a day to replace or anything like that, we know from the first paragraph, we know who we're with and where we're at. So I'm going to give it to us. 1980, Lallybroch. So we're with Roger for most of this chapter. This chapter is third person, but it's through Roger's experience, Roger's senses, I guess. So Roger had begun a notebook, keeping a notebook, at first for a joke, that and as a way to combat a paralyzing fear, Diana writes. In the vein of, quote, surely you can teach your kids to stay the heck away from standing stones, unquote. Kate O. writes, this was something that I wondered about in book 6, when Roger and Bree contemplated going back to their own time. Trying to explain time travel to an adult is hard enough, but to a child? Some things may be easier. Children tend to believe a bit more in the fantastic, but to go from living in one time to another, that had to be incredibly difficult. Because that's kind of that fear. So they've just, well, not just, but again, Mandy is about 3, which means they've been in the 20th century for just under 3 years, or maybe just over 3 years. And I know that always freaks Summer out because it's like 3 years they're unaccounted for. And I don't know that Diana will ever give us that as far as like a faithful timeline of that. Probably not. So the last passage, this is Roger's thoughts, their last passage through the stone. So they're on Ocracoke when they say goodbye to the Frasers, had been terrible. Quote, it was a, quote, howling void where sound seemed to batter you, pulsing through your body, trying to separate each cell from the next. Absolute blindness, but the blindness of looking into the sun and the impact of bodies, ghosts, unseen others who brushed past like moth wings or seemed to hurtle right through you in a colliding thump of entangled bones. A constant sense of screaming. So that's all pretty awful. That's pretty nasty. And he is, it's been about 3 years approximately, and he is still understandably very heavily affected. And you know what? Apparently there's a smell too. He remembered a smell. The scent of air burnt by lightning. In other words, ozone. So he begins his notebook with, quote, it smells strongly of ozone. So Roger is trying to recount his experience of their last passage through the stones for posterity, but also for his kids. He also writes, quote, I think you cannot cross your own lifeline. He thinks this is reflected in how he'd come so close to being killed on his first attempt. Remember, his first attempt was not, well, I started mixing things up because we haven't gotten to book 8 yet, so never mind. His first attempt was when he went back to find Brianna, right? Back So 10-ish, not quite 10, eight or, well, from now about 10-ish years from 1980. So it would have been the equivalent of, oh, maybe it was 1968, excuse me, because they were in the backyard. They were in the 18th century for a good 4 years or so. So his first attempt was when he went back after Brianna, when she left to go find her parents and tell them about the fire. And it was that time with Fiona and the coffee, remembered? He goes in, he comes out, he's unsuccessful, but he's on fire. And Fiona throws the coffee on him and puts the fire out. That's his first attempt. It's many years ago. So he had been thinking, he's writing this now. He had been thinking of his father when he entered the stones, but he was alive because his only memory of his father was from his very, 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 very young age. So by definition, it would have necessarily been his timeline, his own timeline. Any time that he remembered, he can't remember his father from before his birth because he wasn't around, right? So he necessarily, he believes it was because he would have been, you know, spit back out or thrown back out or whatever, because he was thinking of the wrong thing, thinking of his father, and thus was spit out because, like, no, 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 you can't tinker with your own timeline. He writes, quote, "A practical guide for time travelers. Physical phenomena." This is like an outline now, an outline. It includes physical phenomena, known locations, such as ley lines, genetic inheritance, mortality, the influence and properties of gemstones. And then he writes, and blood with a question mark. Kate O writes, "The practical guide for time travelers is such a Roger thing to do. Well-meaning, probably seems like a good idea at the time, but should never exist." I think that's my favorite comment, Kate. So he wonders if he has the obligation to tell everything, to the book at least, to tell everything he knew, believed, or suspected. Claire, for example, didn't think that the blood thing mattered, but Galus had. And they can't prove either way that it affected or didn't affect things, right? It's still a hypothesis. So he crossed it out. He had crossed it out, but he decides to write it back down, blood. And then he writes the word fire with a question mark. So he doesn't know about blood and he doesn't know about fire, but he's including them for just to get like a brain dump, to get everything out. Now, regarding the letters, the one that we talked about in a previous chapter, these letters that Roger and Bree got, that they have decided to read them together and they're going to read them one at a time. These letters had been, quote, "had been written with the definite and specific intent of communication with Bree, with him, which meant that they might well contain unsettling things," unquote. So that's something to keep in mind. And we know that one of the unsettling things that's probably in a letter somewhere is Archbug and his wife and that whole thing. So that's funny that that phrase is here just after the previous chapter. A few pages later, so he, not that he's writing, he moves a few blank pages by. He moves them over and he starts writing on a new blank page and he starts to expand on the topic of mortality that he'd already outlined. And he is kind of writing as he's thinking, a murder and wrongful death. Naturally, he's thinking, naturally, we assume that killing someone, no, he's writing this, naturally, we assume that the killing of someone for any reason, short of self-defense, the protection of another, or the legitimate use of force in wartime is completely indefensible. And then he stops and he rips that page out. And he's having some kind of moral quandary, like, who am I to talk about morality? Who am I to write this stuff? And Bree walks in and they have a little chat. She's like, well, she says something like, isn't that what they make you do in minister school? Like, you have to, like, that's actually one of the things a minister is supposed to do, is talk about morality. So she's trying to say, like, what's the problem? What are you feeling that is stopping you? And he can't identify what his issue is, really, except that he doesn't feel up to, or maybe that he is the person or a person to speak on mortality. So Bree gets Mandy off ready for bed. Roger thinks to himself, oh, you know, I'll work on this. That's all fine and everything. But it will be years and years before this information might be needed. The kids are way too young. They're not going to need it. And so they had taken one of the letters out and he puts the letter back. So there's mention of the postscript. And what was in that postscript? They're leaving in the postscript basically states or describes. It's Jamie writing the postscript telling Bree and Roger that their intent, they're leaving the ridge to go to Scotland to get the press. And he's telling them the property of an Italian gentleman is not safe to carry. It's not safe to carry it with us. So we moved it to a place of safety. Just in case, if you ever need it. Jem knows the place. He doesn't know about the gold, but Jem knows the place. So if you ever need it, tell Jem the Spaniard guards it, and Jem will know what, or the where. He will know what that means as far as the Spaniard, and he will be able to identify the place. That's all we get. Literally all we get. He and Bree, Roger and Bree, agree that it's Charles Stewart who is the Italian gentleman. And they know that it's the gold that they found. And they know now that Jem knows the place where Jamie has chosen to hide it. Or at least Jem knows what the Spaniard means. So between now and the end of the chapter, the reader gets kind of a mini tour of Lallybroch, like how it has so many windows they never can count in one sitting. It's got wide windows, like the different rooms, the different levels, the fact that there's a priest's hole. And then Roger and Bree get jiggy in the kitchen, and then they decide to go to bed. And as they are preparing for sleep, they agree that they will not ask Jem about the Spaniard. Quote, but it didn't matter. The Spaniard, whoever he was, could keep his gold. The family was safe. Unquote. Remember, dear listener, it's Diana Gabaldon writing here. If she ever has anyone believing they're safe, don't believe it for a second. Kate O. writes, there is so much that is important in these first few chapters. The Spaniard and Jem's secret knowledge is just another thing to make a mental note of. Diana has started at least 3 distinct storylines in 5 chapters. Too, 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 too true.
And that was chapter 5. Join us next week or next time. Join us next time when we will be continuing our
yes, next time.
Echo in the Bone.
That's safe.
Echo in the Bone read along with chapter 6 entitled Long Island.
Again, a special thanks to co-producer Kat K. To find out more about how you can support us on Patreon and find out what a co-producer is and how to become one, visit outlanderpod.com/Patreon. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.